Welcome to Tribulation News with your host, Dr. Elizabeth Motke. I have much information to cover. In fact, today I have some breaking news that was posted from Doug Hagman, and I will be covering that article for the first 30 minutes of the show, and then in the second 30 minutes, I will be covering Daniel 7. Thank you for listening. Okay, here is the title of the article that I'm going to discuss, which could very well take a good 30 minutes. It is called The Latest from DHS Insider, obviously written from Doug Hagman. This is what he wrote. After a lengthy self-imposed informational blackout, my high-level DHS contact known as Rosebud emerged with new non-public information about plans being discussed and prepared for implementation by the Department of Homeland Security in the near future. It is important to note that this blackout was directly related to the aggressive federal initiative of identifying and prosecuting leakers, at least those leaks and leakers not sanctioned by the executive office, the latter of which there are many. Due to those circumstances, my source exercised an abundance of caution to avoid compromising a viable line of communication until he had information he felt was significant enough to risk external contact. The following information is a result of an in-person contact between this author and Rosebud within the last 48 hours. With his permission, the interview was digitally recorded and the relevant portions of the contact are provided in a conversational format for easier reading. The original recording was copied onto multiple disks and are maintained in secure locations for historical and insurance purposes. Meeting. The following began after an exchange of pleasantries and other unrelated discussion. The DH person said, "Do I have your permission to record this conversation?" "You do." "I have received a lot of email from people wondering where you went and why you've been so quiet. As I told you earlier, these things are very dicey. Weird things began to happen before the election and have continued since. Odd things, a clampdown of sorts. I started looking and I found, and then it shook me up. I'm not the only one, though, that found. So this means there's surveillance of people within DHS by DHS. So that explains this cloak and dagger stuff for this meeting. I understand. What about the others? They are handling it the same way. I've received many emails asking if you're the same person giving information to Ulsterman. Are you? No, but I think I know at least one of his insiders. Care to elaborate? Sorry, no. Do you trust him or her? I mean, the Ulsterman source? Yes. Okay, so last August you said things were going hot. I printed what you said and things did not seem to happen as you said. And then he says, "You'd better recheck your notes and compare them with some of the events leading up to the election. I think you'll find that a full-blown campaign of deception took place to make certain Obama got back into office, the polls, the media, and a few incidents that happened in the 2 months before the election. I guess if people are looking for some big events, they can point to and say, 'Aha,' for verification. Well, then I overestimated people's ability to tell when they are being lied to." What specific instance are you referring to? Look at the threats to Obama. Start there. The accusation of racism, then look at the polls, and especially the judicial decisions about voter ID laws, bought and paid for, or where there was any potential for problems. The judges got the message loud and clear. Then look at the voter fraud, and not a peep from the Republicans. Nothing. His second term was a done deal in September. This was planned. Frankly, the Obama team knew they had it sewn up long before Election Day. Benghazi could have derailed them, but the fix was in there. So I never saw anything on my end to suggest a ready-made solution had to be implemented. What's going on now? People better pay close attention over the next few months. First, there won't be any meaningful deal about the fiscal crisis. This is planned. I mean, the lack of deal is planned. In fact, it's necessary to pave the way for what is in the short-term agenda. Wait, you're DHS, not some Wall Street insider? So you think they are separate agendas? That's funny. The coming collapse of the U.S. dollar is a done deal. It's been in the work for years, decades, and this is one of the most important cataclysmic events that DHS is preparing for. I almost think that DHS was created for that purpose alone, to fight Americans, not protect them, right here in America. But that's not the only reason. That's the gun issue, too. So what are you seeing at DHS? We don't have a lot of time tonight. Our meeting as well as the country. I mean, I have heard with my own ears plans being made that originate from the White House that involve the hierarchy of DHS. You got to know how DHS works at the highest of levels. It's Jared and Napolitano, with Jared organizing all the plans and approaches. She's the one in charge, at least from my point of view. From what I'm seeing, Obama knows what's going on and has say, but it seems that Jared has the final say, not the other way around. It's screwed up. This really went into high gear since the election. But it's a train wreck at mid-management, but it's more effective at the lower levels. A lot of police departments are being gifted with federal funds with strings attached. The money is flowing out to municipal police departments faster than it can be counted. They are using his money to buy tanks. Well, not real tanks, but you know what I mean. DHS is turning the police into soldiers. By the way, there have been a lot of communication being recently between Napolitano and Pistol, the TSA head. They are planning to use TSA agents in tandem with local police for certain operations that are being planned right now. This is so important that you cannot even begin to imagine. If you get nothing else out of this, please make sure you tell people to watch the TSA and their increasing involvement against the American public. They are the stooges who will be the ones to carry out certain plans when the dollar collapses and the gun confiscation begins. Whoa, wait a minute. You just said a mouthful. What's the agenda here? Your intelligence insider, he knows that we are facing a planned economic collapse. You wrote about this in your articles about Benghazi, or at least that's what I got out of the later articles. So why the surprise? There's a lot here. Let's take it step by step, if you don't mind. Okay, but I'm not going to give it to you in baby steps, big boy steps. This is what I'm hearing. Life for the average American is going to change significantly, and not the change people expect. First, DHS is preparing to work with police departments and the TSA to respond to civil uprisings that will happen when there is a financial panic. And there will be one, maybe as early as this spring, when the dollar won't get you a gumball. I'm not sure what the catalyst will be, but I've heard rumblings about a derivatives crisis as well as an oil embargo. I don't know, that's not my department, but something is going to happen to collapse the dollar, which has been in the works since the 1990s. Now, if it does not happen as soon as this, it's because there are people, real patriots, who are working to prevent this, so it's a fluid dynamic. But that doesn't change the preparations. And the preparations are these. DHS is pre-positioning assets in strategic areas near urban centers all across the country. Storage depots, armories, and even detainment facilities known as FEMA camps. FEMA does not even know that the facilities are earmarked for detainment by executive orders, at least not in the traditional sense they are intended. By the way, people drive by some of these armories every day without even giving them a second look. Commercial and business real estate across the country are being bought up or leased for storage purposes, very low profile. Anyway, I am hearing that the plan from on high is to let the chaos play out for a while, making ordinary citizens beg for troops to be deployed to restore order. But it's all organized to make them appear as good guys. That's when the real head knocking will take place. We're talking travel restrictions, which should not be a problem because gas will be rationed or unavailable. The TSA will be in charge of travel, or at least be a big part of it. They'll be commissioned, upgraded from their current status. They, I mean Jared and Obama, as well as a few others in government, are working to create a perfect storm too. This is being timed to coincide with new gun laws. New federal gun laws? Yes, count on the criminalization to possess just about every gun you can think of, not only restrictions, but actual criminalization of possessing a banned firearm. I heard this directly from the highest of my sources. Plans were being made in the 90s, but were withheld. Now it's a new day, a new time, and they are riding the wave of emotion from Sandy Hook, which, by the way, was as tragic as it was, stinks to high heaven. I mean, there are many things wrong there, and first reports are fast disappearing. The narrative is being changed. Look, there's something wrong with Sandy Hook, but if you write it, you'll be called a crook or worse. Sure, but Sandy Hook, there's something very wrong there, but I'm hearing that you won't be the final straw. There will be another if they think it is necessary. Another shooting? Yes. That would mean they are at least complicit. Well, that's one way of looking at it. Are they? Were they? Do your own research. Nothing I say short of bringing the photographs and documents will convince anyone. And even then, it's like in the wind. So what I'm telling you is that DHS, the TSA, and certain, but not all, law enforcement agencies are going to be elbow deep in riot control in response to an economic incident. At the same time or close to it, gun confiscation will start. It will start on a voluntary basis using federal registration forms, then an amnesty, then the kicking in of doors start. Before or at the same time, you know all of this, the talk of lists. You know the red and blue lists that everyone made fun of? Well, they exist. Although I don't know about their colors, but there are lists of political dissidents maintained by DHS. Names are coordinated with the executive branch, but you know what? They did not start with Obama. They've been around in one form or another for years. The difference, though, is that today they are much more organized. And I'll tell you that the vocal opponents of the politics of the global elite, the bankers, and the opponents of anything standing in their way, well, they're the top of the list to be handled. Handled? As the situation worsens, some might be given a chance to stop their vocal opposition. Some will, others won't. I suppose they are on different lists. Others won't have the chance, but that time, though, it will be chaos and people will be in full defensive mode. They will be hungry, real hunger like we've never experienced before. They will use our hunger as leverage. They will use medical care as leverage. Will this happen all at once? They hope to make it happen at the same time. Big cities first, with sections being set apart from the rest of the country, then the rural areas. There are two different plans for geographical considerations, but it will all come together. Wait, this sounds way, way over the top. Are you telling me? And then he says, no. Who was selected twice now? You know who his associates are, and you are saying this is way over the top. Don't forget that Ayer said, you talked to Larry Grothwell. This guy is a revolutionary. He does not want to transform our country in the traditional sense. He will destroy it. And he's not working alone. He's not working for himself either. He has his handlers, so don't think this is going to be a walk in the park with some type of attempt to rescue the country. Flower, Piven, Alinsky, Marx, all rolled into one. And he won't need the rest of his 4 years to do it. I need to be clear. Let's go back again, to those who speak out about what's happening. How much clearer do you want it? The Second Amendment will be gone, along with the First, at least practically or operationally. The Constitution will be gone, suspended, at least in an operational sense. Maybe they won't actually say that they are suspending it, but we'll do it. Like saying the sky is purple when it's actually blue. How many people will look at the sky and say, yeah, it's purple? They see what they want to see. So the DHS, working with other law enforcement organizations, especially the TSA as it stands right now, will oversee the confiscation of assault weapons, which includes all semi-automatic weapons, following a period of so-called amnesty. It also includes shotguns and hold multiple rounds or have pistol grips. They will go after the high-capacity magazines, anything over, say, 5 rounds. They will go after the ammunition, especially the manufacturer's level. They will require a special license for certain weapons and make it impossible to own anything. More draconian than England. This is a global thing, too. Want to hunt? What gives you the right to hunt their animals? Sound strange? I hope so, but they believe they own the animals. Do you understand now how sick and twisted this is? Their mentality? The obvious intent is to disarm American citizens. They will say that we'll still be able to defend ourselves and go hunting, but even that will be severely regulated. This is the part they are still working out, though. While the plans were made years ago, there is some argument over the exact details. I know that Napolitano, even when her support of the agenda, would like to see this take place outside of an executive order in favor of legislative action and even with UN involvement. But UN involvement would still require legislative approval. Yes, but you're still thinking normal, in normal terms. Stop thinking about a normal situation. The country is divided, which is exactly where Obama wants us to be. We are as ideologically divided as we were during the Civil War, and that rift is growing every day. Add in a crisis, an economic crisis, where ATM and EBT cards will stop working, where bank accounts will contain nothing but air. They are anticipating a revolution and a civil war rolled into one. Imagine when talk show hosts or bloggers or some other malcontent gets on the air or starts writing about the injustice of it all and about how Obama is the Antichrist or something. They will outlaw such talk or writing as inciting the situation. They will make it illegal by saying that it is causing people to die. The Republicans will go along with everything as it's, we have a one-party system. Two parties is an illusion. It's all so surreal to talk about, but you see where this is headed, right? Well, what about the lists? Back to that again, okay. Why do you think that the NSA has surveillance of all communications to identify and stop terrorism? Okay, to be fair, that is part of it, but not the main reason. The federal agencies have identified people who present a danger to them and their agendas. I don't know if they are color-coded, like you mentioned, red, blue, purple, or peach, mango, or whatever, but they exist. In fact, each agency has their own. You know, why is it so hard for people to get their heads around the existence of lists with names of people who pose a threat to their plans? The media made a big deal about Nixon's enemies list, and everyone nodded and said, yeah, that, but today, they've been around for years and years. I think it's because of the nature of the list. What do they plan to do with their enemies? Go back to what Ayer said when in the late 60s and 70s. I forget it. Anyways, he was serious, but to some extent, the same thing has happened before. They, the people on some of these lists, are under surveillance, or at least some, and when necessary, some are approached and made an offer. Others, well, they can be made to undergo certain training. Let's call it sensitivity training, except on a much different level. Others, most that are the most visible and mainstream, are safe for the most part. And you want to know why? It's because they are in the pockets of the very people we are talking about, but they might or might not know it. Corporate sponsorship, follow the money. You know the drill. You saw it happen before with the birth certificate. It's people that are just under the national radar but are effective. They have to worry. Those who have been publicly marginalized already but continue to talk or write or post, they are in trouble. It's people who won't sell out, who think they can make a difference. Those are the people who have to worry. Of course, I'm not worried. Think about recent deaths that everybody believes were natural or suicides. Were they? People are too busy working their behinds off to put food on the table to care about some guy somewhere who vapor locks because of too many donuts and coffee and late nights. And it seems plausible enough to happen. This time, when everything collapses, do you think they will care if it is a bullet or a heart attack that takes out the opposition? No. That's disturbing. Do you think about the Oklahoma City bombing in 95? Remember how Clinton blamed that on talk radio, or at least in part? Take what happened then and put it into context today. Then multiply this by 100, and you will begin to understand where this is going. People like Rush and Hannity have a narrow focus on the political leader. they'll still be up and running during all of this to allow for the appearance of normal. Stay within the script, comrade. But as far as the others, they have certain plans, and these plans are becoming more transparent. They are getting bolder. They are pushing lies, and the bigger the lie, the easier it is to sell the people. They will even try to sell a sense of normalcy as things go absolutely crazy and break down. It will be surreal, and some will believe it. Think it's only happening in certain places, and we can draw everything back once the dust settles. But when it does, this place will not be the same. Will there be resistance within the ranks of law enforcement? You know, will some say they won't go along with the plan, like the Oath Keepers? Absolutely. But they will not only be outnumbered, but outgunned, literally. The whole objective is to bring in outside forces to deal with the civil unrest that will happen in America. And where does their allegiance lie? Certainly not to Sheriff Bob or you or me. During all of this, and you've got to remember that the dollar collapse is a part of this, our country is going to have to be redone. I've seen, personally, a map of North America without borders done this year. The number 2015 was written across the top, and I believe that was meant as a year, along with this map in the same year where this was another map showing the United States cut up into sectors. I'm not talking about what people have seen on the internet, but something entirely different, zones, and a big star on the city of Denver. That is where they believe the new capital will be. Sound like a conspiracy stuff on the internet? Yep. Maybe they were right. It sure looks that way. It will read that way if you decide to write about this. Good luck with that. Anyway, the country seemed to be split into sectors, but not the kind shown on the internet. Different? What is the context of that? Across the bottom of this was written economic sectors. It looked like a work in progress. So I can't tell you any more than that. From the context, I think it has to do with the collapse of the dollar. Why would DHS have this? I mean, it seems almost contrived, doesn't it? Not really when you consider the bigger picture, but wait before we go off into that part. I need to tell you about Obamacare, you know, the new health care coming up. It plays a big part, a huge part, in the immediate reshaping of things. How so? It creates a mechanism of centralized control over people. That's the intent of this monster of a bill, not affordable health care. And it'll be used to identify gun owners. Think your health records are private? Have you been to the doctor lately? Asked about owning a gun? Why do you think they ask? Do you think they care about your safety? Say yes to owning a gun and your information is shared with another agency and ultimately you'll be identified as a security risk. The records will be matched with other agencies. You think that they are simply relying on gun registration forms? This is part of data collection that people don't get. Oh, and don't even think about getting a script for some mood enhancement drug and being able to own a gun. Ayers and Dorn are having the time of their lives seeing things they've worked for all of their adult lives actually coming to pass. Oh, before I forget, look at the recent White House visitor logs. Why? Where did that come from? Unless they are redacted, you will see the influence of Ayers right now. The Weather Underground has been reborn. So has their agenda. Eugenics? Population control? Yep. And re-education camps. But trust me, if you write about this, you'll be called a kook. It's up to you. It's your reputation, not mine. And speaking about that, you do know that this crew is using the internet to ruin people, right? They are paying people to infiltrate discussion sites and forums to call people like you idiots. Show me the proof, they say. Why doesn't your source come forward? If he knows so much, why not go to Fox or the media? Tell them if it's not broadcast on CNN, it's not real. Well, they've got it backwards. Very little on the news is real. The stock market, the economy, the last presidential poll, very little is real. But this crew is really internet savvy. They've got a lot of people they pay to divert issues on forums, to mock people, to marginalize them. They know what they're doing. People think they'll take sites down, hack them. Why do that when they are more effective to infiltrate the discussion? Think about the birth certificate. I mean, the eligibility problem of Obama. Perfect example. How soon do you see these things taking place? They already are in motion. If you're looking for a date, I can't tell you. Remember, the objectives are the same. The plans, well, they adapt. They exploit. Watch how this fiscal cliff thing plays out. This is the run-up to the big economic event. I can't give you a date. I can tell you to watch things this spring. Start the inauguration and go from there. Watch the metals when they dip. It'll be a good indication that things are about to happen. I got that little tidbit from my friend. And then he'll give more information out after the inauguration. So I got permission from my dear friend Doug Hagman as well to discuss this on the air. And you can see read the full article on Canada Free Press as well. We're going to go to a brief 30-second to one-minute break. And now we'll continue on with Daniel 7. Hi, this is Dr. Elizabeth Maki. Thank you for listening today. Please make a donation at BBS Radio at radio station number 2 under the Tribulation News link. That is on Sunday nights from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Thank you for your time and your willingness to listen to the latest news and latest information that is pertinent as we enter perilous times. Welcome back to Tribulation News with your host, Dr. Elizabeth Monkey. I hope you enjoyed that brief commercial break. I'm going to teach you a little bit on how to study the Bible before diving into Daniel 7. This is what I learned when I was in Bible college for many years, and just something I had to do on my own time as well. The first thing you do is, if there's any specific part of Scripture you want to study, is you look at the verse first. So say you want to look at Daniel 9:26. You look at that verse first. You study it. You wrestle with it. You look at each word. You break it down. You do that. Then you look at the verses before and the verses after. And then you see just how that fits into that one verse, and you wrestle with that for a little while longer. And then you look at the chapter before and the chapter after and see how that fits into the current chapter you're reading. So say you're reading Daniel 9:26, you're going to look at Daniel 8 and Daniel 10. And then after that, you look at the entire book. You look at the historical context of that book. Who wrote the book? When was it written? Where was this person writing this information from? You do that. And then you look at the entire Bible itself. So you look at how this fits into the entire genre that you're reading. So obviously Daniel is a prophet, minor prophet in the Old Testament. Well, we also know there are major prophets like Isaiah and Jeremiah. Well, then if you look at that, you look at how they prepared the way for Jesus to come in Matthew to John. And then you have the church in the book of Acts. You can kind of see how it all fits together by studying Scripture that way. And I encourage you to get a commentary to read along when you're studying the Bible. And if you want to learn more information of how to study the Bible, you can always send me an email at tribulationnews@yahoo.com. You can look at my profile page on here on BBS Radio for more information as well. And I would be glad to teach you some more tricks and ways to study the Bible in more detail. And if you have any questions, feel free to send me an email. I'd be glad to help you in any way. Okay, so I've done shows before on Daniel 7 and Daniel 9, and it was a big hit. And people are thirsting to understand how prophecy fits into what's going on today. So I'm going to dive right into Daniel 7, and I want commentary along with it so you can understand what God's Word is saying and you can look at the bigger picture of what's going on today and how far we are on the timeline. Because according to that article that I just read, it confirms to me with my own research that we're about to enter mid-tribulation, which would be this spring as of March or April. So that tells me that the Antichrist is about to rise to power. And he's been in power, though, secretly. But he's going to take the mask off, and we'll really know who he is. So anyways, I'm going to dig right in. I'm going to start at Daniel 7, chapter 1. Please have your Bible in front of you and some notes that you might want to take. And we'll read this together and learn together as we learn from God's word. All right, Daniel 7, verse 1. In the first year of Belshazzar, king of Babylon, Daniel saw a great dream and vision in his mind as he lay on his bed. Then he wrote the dream down and related the following summary of it. Okay, before I get any further, I read from the New American Standard Version because it's closer to the original language. In this case, it's Hebrew and Aramaic for the Old Testament and New Testament. And the New Testament also is written in Greek. So that's why I read New American Standard. Okay, now this is what the commentary says for Daniel 7, verse 1. The vision recorded by the prophet Daniel in this chapter was revealed to him in the first year of Belshazzar's reign, 553 BC, when Belshazzar was made coregent with, sometimes I struggle with words, Nabonidus. Daniel's dream predated by 14 years his experience in the lion's den, which occurred in or soon after 539. When the dream came, Daniel was about 68 years of age, for he was taken captive at or about the age of 16, 52 years earlier in 605 BC. The revelation was given Daniel in a dream through visions. In referring to the experience as a dream, Daniel was emphasizing the unity of the revelation, and in referring to it as visions, plural. He emphasized the successive stages in which the revelation was given. Five times in chapter 7, he said, looked, which is in verses 2, 6, and 7, and 13. And once, I kept looking, in verse 11. The dream refers to his being asleep, and the vision refers to what he saw while dreaming. Sometimes, however, a person had a vision while he was awake. Because of the great significance of Daniel's dream, he immediately wrote down a summary of it. Daniel had been the interpreter of two dreams by Nebuchadnezzar, chapters 2 and 4. Then the prophet statesman became the recipient of four dreams or visions, chapters 7, 8, 9, verses 20 to 27, and chapter 10 to 1, clear to chapter 12 to verse 5. Okay, verse 2. Daniel said, I was looking in my vision by night, and behold, the four winds of heaven were stirring up the great sea. In the first six chapters, Daniel wrote in the third person. In the last six chapters, he wrote in the first person. In his vision, Daniel first saw the great sea churned by the action of four winds. The words translated winds may also be rendered spirits, that is, angels. Elsewhere in Scripture, this word is used to refer to God's providential actions in the affairs of men through angels. As we see in Jeremiah 23, verse 19, chapter 49, verse 36, chapter 51, verse 1, Zechariah 6, verses 1 to 6, chapter 7, verse 14, and Revelation 7, 1 to 3. Throughout the Old Testament, the Mediterranean Sea is referred to as the Great Sea. Numbers 34, 6 and 7, Joshua 1, 4, Joshua 9, 1, Joshua 15, 12, and verse 47, Joshua 23, verse 4, Ezekiel 47, 10, verse 15, verse 20, chapter 48, verse 28. This vision then relates specifically to the Mediterranean world. Okay, verses 3 and 4. And four great beasts were coming up from the sea, different from one another. The first was like a lion and had the wings of an eagle. I kept looking until its wings were plucked, and it was lifted up from the ground and made to stand on 2 feet like a man. A human mind also was given to it. Okay, the commentary says, the second thing Daniel saw in the vision was four great beasts emerging from the agitated sea, as explained to Daniel later, verse 17. The four beasts represented four kingdoms. The first beast was like a lion, an animal symbolizing power and strength. The lion had eagle's wings, which speaks of swiftness. Interestingly, the lion and eagle were both symbols of Babylon, Jeremiah 4, verse 7 and 13, Ezekiel 17, verse 3. The violent wrenching of the wings from the lion would deprive it of its great mobility. This could refer to Nebuchadnezzar's insanity or its empire deterioration after his death. The lion's rising up on 2 feet, its hind legs, made it look more like a man. The fact that it got a man's heart suggests that the animal lost its beauty, beastly nature, and showed compassion. The lion's rising on its hind legs and having a man's heart may refer to Nebuchadnezzar's humanitarian interests. Verse 5. And behold, another beast, a second one, resembling a bear. And it was raised up on one side, and 3 ribs were in its mouth between its teeth. And thus they said to it, Arise, devour much meat. Okay, this is what the commentary says. The second beast was like a bear. The second beast was like a bear, an animal of formidable strength. 1 Samuel 17, verse 34, Amos 5, verse 19, Hosea 13, verse 8. This represents Medo-Persia, the empire that followed Babylon. That's also modern-day Iran. The Medo-Persian's army was strong and fierce. Isaiah 13, 15 to 18. Unlike the grace of the man-like lion, the bear was ponderous and ungainly. It was evidently reclining with one side higher than the other. This suggests that though Persia rose later than Media, Persia soon overshadowed the Medes in the United Kingdom. The 3 ribs in the bear's mouth may represent the kingdom of Egypt, Assyria, and Babylon, which had preceded the empire presented by the bear. Or they may represent Babylon, Lydia, and Egypt, 3 nations conquered by the Medes and Persians. The bear was told to devour flesh. This command suggests that kingdoms operate by divine appointment, not their own authority, in devouring other kingdoms and extending its territory into a vast empire. The bear was fulfilling God's purpose. Verse 6. After this, I kept looking, and behold, another one, like a leopard, which had on its back 4 wings of a bird. The beast also had 4 heads, and a dominion was given to it. The third beast Daniel saw was like a leopard, an animal noted for its swiftness, Habakkuk 1:8, cunning and agility, Jeremiah 5:6, Hosea 13:7. This beast had 4 wings like a bird, stressing a swiftness beyond its natural capacity. An additional feature of this beast is that it had 4 heads. Also, authority to rule was given it. The kingdom that conquered Medo-Persia was Greece, which did so with the great speed, conquering the entire empire between 334 and 330 BC. A few years after Alexander died, his kingdom was divided into 4 parts. See Daniel 8, 8 and 22. Okay, verses 7 and 8. After this, I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, a 4th beast, dreadful and terrifying and extremely strong, and it had large iron teeth. It devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and it was different from all the beasts that were before it, and it had 10 horns. While I was contemplating the horns, behold, another horn, a little one, came up among them, and 3 of the first horns were pulled out by the roots before it. And behold, this horn possessed eyes like the eyes of a man, and a mouth uttering great boasts. Daniel now described a 4th beast. Instead of likening to some known animal, Daniel simply called it a beast. Apparently, it was a mongrel composed of parts of a lion, bear, and leopard. The 4th beast was more terrifying and powerful than the 3 preceding beasts, which were all ferocious and destructive. This beast had large iron teeth with which it was able to crush and devour its prey. The empire represented by this mongrel beast had crushed and assimilated into itself the 3 previous empires described by the lion, the bear, and the leopard, trampled underfoot whatever was left, Daniel 7:19. A significant feature of this fourth and different beast was that it had 10 horns. According to verse 24, they represent 10 kings. As Daniel focused his attention on the horns, he saw another horn begin to emerge among the 10. This little horn had an insignificant beginning, but in its growth, it was able to uproot 3 of the existing horns. This little horn was noted for its intelligence. It had the eyes of man and its blasphemous claims. It had a mouth that spoke boastfully, verses 11, 20, and 25. See also verses 19 and 26. Okay, verses 9 and 10. I kept looking until thrones were set up, and the Ancient of Days took his seat. His vesture was like white snow, and the hair of his head like pure wool. His throne was ablaze with flames. His wheels were a burning fire. A river of fire was flowing and coming out before him. Thousands upon thousands were attending him, and myriads upon myriads were standing before him. The court sat, and the books were open. What a beautiful picture. I love reading that. Okay. In this portion of the vision, Daniel saw thrones of judgment set up. One throne was occupied by the Ancient of Days. This is the sovereign God, Isaiah 43, verse 13 and 57, verse 15, who exercises control over men and nations. His white clothing and hair speak of his holiness, Revelation 1, 14. Daniel's description of the glory surrounding the one seated on the flaming throne with wheels recalls a description of the glory of God which Ezekiel saw, Ezekiel 1, verse 4 to 28. The thousands who surrounded the throne were God's servants, angels who execute his will. When Daniel saw God the judge take his seat, the court, Daniel 7, 26, was convened and the books were opened. Interestingly, as stated earlier, Daniel's name means God has judged, or God is my judge. See Daniel 1, verse 7. Here, Daniel saw God as the world's judge. In Revelation 20, verse 12, the opening of books refers to a review and judging of one's stewardship. Thus, God who assigns power to kingdoms will judge those kingdoms. Verses 11 and 12. Then I kept looking because of the sound of the boastful words which the horn was speaking. I kept looking until the beast was slain and his body was destroyed and given to the burning fire. As for the rest of the beasts, their dominion was taken away, but an extension of life was granted to them for an appointed period of time. As Daniel was watching the little horn because of its boasting, verse 8, he saw that the fourth beast was slain, consigned to blazing fire. This event will terminate the times of the Gentiles, Luke 21, verse 24 and 27. The kingdoms represented by the three preceding beasts had already been stripped of their own power by military conquest, but the fourth beast will be relieved of its power, not by being conquered militarily, but by divine judgment, Daniel 9, 27. Revelation 11, 15, and chapter 19, verse 15. Each of the three, however, had been allowed to live for a short time. This may mean that the cultures of each of the first three conquered empires were assimilated into the conquering nations. Verses 13 and 14. I kept looking in the night visions, and behold, with the clouds of heaven, one like the Son of Man was coming, and he came to the Ancient of Days, and was presented before him. And to him was given a dominion, glory, and a kingdom, that all the peoples, nations, and men of every language might serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which will not pass away, and his kingdom is one which will not be destroyed. Amen. I love that. Okay. In the third major portion of this vision, Daniel saw the Son of Man approaching the Ancient of Days. Jesus Christ, taking the title Son of Man from this prophecy, frequently used it to refer to himself as recorded in the Gospels, such as Mark 8:31 and John 1:51. When the Son of Man is brought into the presence of the Ancient of Days, all the authority, glory, and sovereign power had been exercised by rulers in the four kingdoms, over all peoples, nations, and men of every language, Daniel 3, verse 4 and 7, Daniel 4, verse 1, Daniel 5, verse 19, Daniel 6, verse 25, was conferred on him, and those peoples worshipped him. This is in keeping with the Father's promise to the Son in Psalm 2, verses 6 to 9, and will be fulfilled at Christ's second advent, Matthew 24, verse 30, 25, verse 31, and Revelation 11, 15, which is right around the corner with how things are coming. His second advent could be as early as 2016. Anyways, the Son of Man will establish an everlasting dominion or kingdom, Daniel 4, verse 34, and Daniel 7, verse 27. That kingdom will never be conquered by another, Daniel 6, verse 26. His reign will be established on earth, Revelation 20, verses 1 to 6. At the expiration of the 1,000 years of the Lord's millennial reign, he will surrender the kingdom to God the Father, after which Christ will be appointed as ruler over God's eternal kingdom forever. 1 Corinthians 15, 24 to 28. Okay, and then there's more. There's verses 15 to 17. As for me, Daniel, my spirit was distressed within me, and the vision in my mind kept alarming me. I approached one of those who were standing by and began asking him the exact meaning of all this. So he told me and made known to me the interpretation of these things. These great beasts, which are four in number, are four kings who will arise from the earth. Like Nebuchadnezzar before him, Daniel was disturbed by his dream. Though he had demonstrated the ability to interpret dreams on previous occasions, he could not interpret this one or his next one in chapter 8, verse 15. So he called on one of those standing nearby. Apparently the angel later identified as Gabriel, chapter 8, verse 16, and chapter 9, verse 21, to interpret the vision to him. It explained that the four great beasts represent four kingdoms. As stated earlier, the four kingdoms are Babylon, represented by the lion, Medo-Persia, represented by the bear raised up on one side, Greece, represented by the winged leopard with four heads, and Rome, represented the mongrel beast. Verse 18. But the saints of the highest one will receive the kingdom and possess the kingdom forever for all ages to come. After the destruction of the fourth beast at the second advent, the saints of the Most High will receive the kingdom. The saints refer to the believing Jews and Christians. And then it goes on to say, the existence of the church in the present age was nowhere in the Old Testament. The nation Israel had been set aside by divine discipline in the present times of the Gentiles, which began with Nebuchadnezzar during the times of the Gentiles. Four empires. Daniel was told would rise and rule over the land and people of Israel. Yet God's covenant to Daniel, David, in 2 Samuel 7:16 and Psalm 89:14 stands and will ultimately be fulfilled. The saints, the believing Jews and Christians, will enjoy the kingdom, the fulfillment of God's promise to Israel. Verses 19 and 20. Then I desired to know the exact meaning of the fourth beast, which was different from all the others, exceedingly dreadful with its teeth of iron and its claws of bronze, and which devoured and crushed and trampled down the remainder with its feet, and the meaning of the ten horns that were on its head and the other horn which came up before which three of them fell, namely that horn which had eyes and a mouth uttering great boasts, and which was larger in appearance than its associates. Daniel seems to have had no difficulty in interpreting the significance of the first three beasts. It was the fourth beast that caused him consternation, and he asked the angel, probably Gabriel, to interpret the meaning of the beast and its ten horns and the other horn that came up among the ten and was so imposing. What is represented by the ten horns, and particularly the little horn, is of great significance. For from this point on to the end of the prophecy, Daniel concerned himself with the revelation about the person and work of the individual represented by this little horn. Verses 21-22. I kept looking, and that horn was waging war with the saints and overpowering them, until the Ancient of Days came and judgment was passed in favor of the saints of the highest one, and the time arrived when the saints took possession of the kingdom. Several facts about this little horn had already been revealed to Daniel. One, it came after the ten horns, kings, were in existence and then was contemporaneous with them. Two, it uprooted three of the ten horns, kings. Three, it was intelligent and had the eyes of a man. Four, it was arrogant and boastful. Now, three additional facts are given. Five, he will persecute the saints of the Most High. And obviously, the horn represents a person. In 7:24, he is said to be a king. As in verse 18, the saints refer to the nation Israel. His persecution of Israel will take place in the tribulation. Six, he will overcome. He was defeating the nation Israel and will bring that nation under his authority. Revelation 12, 13 and 17, and 17, verse 7. Seven, he will be judged by God. Revelation 19, 19 and 20. And Israel, no longer under the rule of this little horn, will enter into her covenant blessings in the kingdom. Daniel 7, verse 18. Verse 23. Thus, he said, the fourth beast will be a fourth kingdom on the earth, which will be different from all the other kingdoms and will devour the whole earth and tread it down and crush it. Though historically the sphere of the fourth beast, though greater than the extent of each of the previous three kingdoms, was limited, the sphere of this coming ruler in the fourth kingdom will be worldwide. Daniel was told that this empire will devour the whole earth, Revelation 13, 7, and it will be a ferocious conquest in which that kingdom will trample and crush those who oppose it. This anticipates a coming one-world government under a worldwide dictator, which is getting implemented as of this month. Okay, verse 24. As for the ten horns, out of this kingdom, ten kings will arise, and another will arise after them, and he will be different from the previous ones and will subdue three kings. Okay, the commentary says, the angel then interpreted the meaning of the ten horns, stating that they are ten kings in the kingdom. The fourth empire, in spite of its great power, will be characterized by progressive weakness, deterioration, and division. When the hordes from the north conquered the Roman Empire in the 5th century AD, they did not unite to form another empire. Instead, individual nations emerged out of the Roman Empire. Some of those nations and others stemming from them have continued till the present day. The present age, then, is the ten-horned era of the fourth beast. Sometime after the rise of the ten horns, and no clue was given Daniel as to how much later, another king, the little horn, will arise. And in his rise to power, he will subdue three kings, called three horns. That is, he will bring three of the ten nations under his authority in his initial rise to power, which he has already done. Verse 25, he will speak out against the Most High and wear down the saints of the Highest One, and he will intend to make alterations in times and in law, and they will be given into his hand for a time, times, and a half a time. Besides several facts already given about this coming king, three additional ones are now revealed. One, he will oppose God's authority. He will speak against the Most High, Revelation 13, 6. On the Most High, see comments on Daniel 3:26. Two, he will oppress his saints, Israel, and of course Christians. He will introduce an entirely new era in which he will abandon all previous laws and institute his own system. As in 9:27, he will appear as Israel's friend, but will become Israel's persecutor, which he's already doing. The saints will be handed over to him and will occupy Jerusalem as the capital of the empire. That's worldwide saints, not just Israel itself, for 3.5 years, because the beast gets 42 months to reign, and that is starting at mid-trib, which would be as soon as March or April next year. Anyways, a time, times and a half time, refers to the 3.5 years of the Great Tribulation, with a time meaning 1 year, times 2 years, and a half a time, 6 months. This equals to 1,260 days in Revelation 12:6, and the 42 months of Revelation 11, verse 2, 13, verse 5. And you can also look at Daniel 4:16. Verses 26 and 27. But the court will sit for judgment, and his dominion will be taken away, annihilated, and destroyed forever. Then the sovereignty the dominion, and the greatness of all the kingdoms under the whole heaven will be given to the power of the saints of the highest one. His kingdom will be an everlasting kingdom, and all the dominions will serve and obey him. When the judge, God the Father, convenes the court, that is, when he judges the little horn, his power will be removed and he will be destroyed. This will occur at the second advent of Christ. At the beginning of the millennium, the Son of Man will be given authority to rule, Daniel 7:14. And he will rule over the saints, the people of the Most High, that is, the nation Israel, and of course, Christians too, which has been bound to God by God's covenant with Abraham, Genesis 12, verses 1 to 6, chapter 13, verses 14 to 17, chapter 15, verses 18 to 21. The kingdom will not be overthrown and superseded by another. It will continue in the millennium and on forever. Daniel 4, verse 34, Daniel 6, verse 26, Daniel 7, verse 14. All peoples and kings will worship and obey him. Okay, the last verse, verse 28. At this point, Revelation ended. As for me, Daniel, my thoughts were greatly alarming, and my face grew pale, but I kept the matter to myself. That would be hard to do. Anyways, the prophetic panorama of the times of the Gentiles was so awesome to Daniel that he was so deeply moved. He did not share the vision with anyone at the time, but later he wrote the prophecies that bear his name. He recorded what had been revealed to him in the vision. One cannot escape the parallels between the truths revealed to Daniel on this occasion and was revealed to Nebuchadnezzar early in his reign. Both cover the span of the times of the Gentiles. Both dreams indicate that Israel and her land will be ruled over by four successive world empires. The first was Babylon, represented by the head of gold and his winged lion. The second was Medo-Persia Empire, represented by the chest and arms of silver, and the bear raised up on one side. The third was the Grecian Empire, represented by the belly and thighs of bronze and the four-headed winged leopard. The fourth was the Roman Empire, represented by the legs of iron with feet mixed with clay and by the mongrel beast. The iron-like strength of the fourth beast is seen in the iron legs and the beast's iron teeth as well. Sovereignty passed from Assyria to Babylon in 609 BC, from Babylon to Persia in 539 BC. From Persia to Greece in 330 BC, and from Greece to Rome in the 1st century BC. Toward the end of the time of the Gentiles, worldwide authority will be exercised by one called a little horn, who will speak to prevent Christ's rule on earth by destroying God's covenant people. His short reign of 7 years will be terminated by the second advent of Christ. At his coming, Christ will establish his millennial kingdom on earth in fulfillment of God's covenant with Israel, as we see in Matthew 24 and Luke 21. So that's the gist of it, and I hope you enjoyed hearing the breaking news that was written by Doug Hagman that he gave you permission to speak about on the air today. And I hope that you learn about Daniel 7 in more detail, and it makes more sense to you now, and you're able to apply it to current world events as you prepare for all of what's coming next year and in the years to come. So, I thank you for listening, and God bless each and every one of you. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me and check out my site. And if you can, please donate. If you cannot, that's okay. I know times are tough, but more than anything, I need your prayers. Please pray for me, because I know I will be attacked, as you have heard from that very own article that I read aloud. And I thank you for all that you do, and I'll be on the air in a couple weeks. Thank you, and God bless you.